It's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And our guest this first hour is our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock, who practiced neurosurgery for many years and then retired, but really didn't retire. He has been researching so many of the diseases that plague mankind since he retired, and has written a book we carry, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. And we carry his book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And of course, he publishes, or I should say, the Newsmax publishes the Blaylock Wellness Report, which comes out on a monthly basis. I always look forward to reading because it really has so many exciting things in it. Perhaps later we can tell our listeners a little bit more about how they could get to know more about the Blaylock Wellness Report. But this evening we're going to be talking about vaccines. And you know, this is a very, very controversial subject. Well, not to doctors. Most doctors say vaccines are wonderful. Look what they've done. One of the great accomplishments of all time was doing away with smallpox, and that's really true. I think doing away with smallpox really was an amazing accomplishment. And then, of course, doing away with polio and doing away with childhood illnesses. Opponents will, of course, point out that the childhood illnesses were really declining rapidly before the advent of vaccination. But opponents will point to all the things that have happened during this last century. The marked increase of cancer from 1 in, well, we used to have 3 in 100, now we have about 50 in 100 of Americans will develop cancer sometimes during their lives, and the increase in allergic disease and asthma and autism and so many other illnesses that some people want to link and suggest may be actually caused by the vaccines. Well, really to get into the background of where the truth lies, let's go to Dr. Russell Blaylock. Russell, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm going to let you pick up the story and take it from there. What do the people in the listening audience need to know about vaccination?
Well, there's a lot of things they need to know. It's just such a huge subject, and there's so many lies involved in this entire vaccine program. It's all predicated on the idea of terrifying the public, particularly parents of small children, into thinking that if they don't get their children vaccinated, there's just a very high possibility their children can contract a fatal disease. And then nationally and, you know, statewide in your particular state, there's this paranoia, this obsessive fear that if we don't vaccinate as many people as we can, the United States is going to be swept with epidemics and there's just going to be mass death. Now, what they don't tell the public is that all of the studies are indicating that is just not true. None of these things are true. One of the grand lies is this idea of herd immunity. And what that basically says is that if you can vaccinate 80% of people to a particular organism, for instance, measles, if you can get 80% of them vaccinated, that'll protect the whole nation against an epidemic. But you have to reach that number or higher. What the American public does not know is that we have been sold a bill of goods that nowhere near 80% of people have immunologic protection against most of the common diseases for which we're vaccinated.
All right, you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock here at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead.
So if we look at this herd immunity myth, again, it says that 80% of people have to be vaccinated against these organisms. Well, all of us had our childhood vaccines. Dr. Stan did, I did. Millions and millions of people in the United States, and realize now that we're reaching the peak of the baby boomers. That's people of my age and Dr. Stan's age who are even approaching points of retirement. Now, all of those people were vaccinated as children, and we were told this myth that our immunity from these vaccinations lasted a lifetime. Well, now we know that, in fact, it didn't last more than 4 to 12 years at the most. So for most of our lives, of most of the population in the United States, we do not have immunologic protection against most of these diseases. So herd immunity does not exist in this country. Most people, vaccination ran out long ago, decades ago. So not even 20 to 30% of the population in the United States is adequately, their word, vaccinated or immunized. So the herd immunity is a total lie and a myth. But yet they still keep this myth up, saying in every state, we've got to keep pushing this program. We need more children vaccinated, more adults vaccinated, because we've got to keep this herd immunity up. Otherwise, this nation will be swept with these deadly epidemics. Well, the other big secret is that when we look back at their examples, you know, they'll say, well, if we don't vaccinate our children against measles, it'll kill tens of millions of people, and we have evidence of that. Well, we look at the evidence. Where did you get the evidence? It's only in third world nations where thousands of people die during a measles epidemic. The reason is because they have heavy incidence of parasitic infection, very poor nutrition, very poor public health measures, and so their immune system is very weak, and when a virus comes through, you have high death rates. But we know that from a number of studies that the reason you don't see epidemics in developed countries of this proportion and death rates of this proportion is because of better nutrition, better public health measures, that is sanitation, etc., so that even if these epidemics occur or start to occur, they never really produce any high death rates. Now, is there evidence of that? Yes. Every so often, we'll see a little mini epidemic of measles or mumps or pertussis throughout the United States. And in every case, there's only one or two deaths.
All right, you hold that thought. We'll break the rest of our stations right on board. Well, Dr. Blaylock is just saying that they have one myth, and that is about herd immunity. Oh, my goodness, we have to have herd immunity, 80% of the population vaccinated. And they know it isn't true because, of course, the vaccinations that we took in childhood, I took mine, diphtheria, pertussis, whooping cough, you know, when I was very, very young, and I have never had them again, they only lasted the most 6 to 12 years. So the vast majority of the American people really have no protection against the childhood diseases after a few years. But we don't see the major epidemics here. And, of course, the point that Dr. Blaylock brings out is they try to frighten us, say, oh, look, you know, we got these major epidemics, you know, millions of people would die. I mean, but this doesn't happen in the United States. We may have an outbreak of an epidemic, but very, very few people die here. They die in the third world countries because the people have parasites, because they have a poor immune response. And you get an epidemic going in with people with a poor immune response, impoverished, malnourished people in third world countries. Yes, they're going to die in large numbers. But in first world countries with good nutrition, we just don't see it. And yet they still try to frighten us to death with this idea, if we don't have herd immunity, millions are going to die. And it's simply not true. So think of the story there, Russell.
Right. And if you look at these outbreaks ever so often of measles, mumps, pertussis, what happens is that, number one, it doesn't really spread through the community. Number two, the deaths that occur, and usually it's no more than one or two deaths, always occur in children who have very impaired immune system. That is, children that have cancer, leukemia, lymphomas, children who are born with immune deficiencies, very, very young children who are too young to vaccinate anyway. The other children that even get sick, what the studies have consistently shown, is that most of them were fully vaccinated. So the vaccine didn't work even in the children. So here you have tens of millions of children vaccinated in this country, and the studies are showing that a significant percentage of those children don't have immune protection, even as children. Again, pointing out that this idea of herd immunity is a total lie. It is a deception perpetrated on the public to terrify mothers and fathers to get their children vaccinated. It's the same ploy they use with the flu vaccine. Every year, we're told, 35 to 36,000 elderly die from the flu, and therefore it's important that all people over age 55 get their flu vaccine. Yet, the studies that are on the CDC show, well, that's not quite true. In fact, less than 1,000 people in the entire nation ever die of the flu during a year's time. And these people, again, are infirm, have immune deficiencies, have cancer, have other serious medical problems, and that's why they die. Well, the interesting thing is if you vaccinate those people, it does not give them protection because their immune system's too weak to respond to the vaccine. This is known. It's written about repeatedly in the medical literature. They just don't share it with the practicing physician, and they don't share that information with the general public. The media does not carry this story. But that's very important to understand, that if you have serious disease, you're not going to respond to your vaccine. And so you're getting a load of toxins unnecessarily. Now, they realize that the immunization rate with flu vaccine is so poor, they've come out with a new story. And that is, well, even though the virus that we pick is not usually the right virus for that year to put in the vaccine itself has some powerful immune stimulants called adjuvants, and that boosts your immunity, so that helps out. Well, if that's true, and there is evidence that, in fact, most vaccinations work not because they have a particular virus or bacteria included, but just because they generally boost your immune system by stimulating it. Well, if that's true, there's an easier and much safer way to do that, and that is oral immune stimulants like beta-glucan. These things boost your immunity. Even the carotenoids like beta-carotene, alpha-carotene, lycopene, lutein, they all boost your immunity, and particularly the elderly. So it protects them better than the vaccination does, because a lot of vaccinations actually suppress your immunity, and that's because they contain things like mercury. Almost 80% of all the flu vaccines in this country contain a very high dose of mercury. Mercury is an immune suppressant. Certain types of vaccines, like the measles vaccine, is a very powerful immune suppressant. That's well known in the field of vaccine studies, that the immune suppression can last for months after a measles vaccine, and that it can be so profound, it's equal almost to what we see with AIDS. We know that several viruses do that. They can suppress the immune system for prolonged periods of time. Well, that makes you more susceptible to other diseases, other viral infections, some of which could be fatal. We knew, for instance, that the polio virus, which was the oral polio live virus that was given in the 50s, every case of polio that occurred after that was caused by the polio vaccine itself. And in the world today, in the third world where they're giving all these oral polio vaccines, they have caused a vaccine polio epidemic in the third world. That was written up in the bulletin of the World Health Organization, in which they said, well, we made an error. We have actually introduced polio in countries that did not have cases of polio. But now that we've done it, we can't stop, because if we don't immunize everyone, the epidemic's going to spread over the whole world. And they know that most people that were immunized with, against polio have no protection now, that the vaccine ran out long ago. So even for the polio vaccine, most of us that took that vaccine, it's no longer effective. The other thing that people have been told is a total myth is that vaccines were the cause of the disappearance of these great epidemics in the first place. Well, studies have clearly shown that for almost all of these childhood diseases, and things like polio included, the death rate fell as much as anywhere from 60% for some of the infections to as much as 90% for other infections before the vaccine programs were ever introduced. So you say, well, what caused the disappearance of the epidemics? Well, there's several things. Number one, we know that viral epidemics tend to burn themselves out and disappear. That's a well-known phenomenon in virology. The other is that improved public health, that is better sanitation, cleaner water, etc., significantly reduces the chance of epidemics occurring, and improved nutrition is one of the most important. That in countries that have better nutrition, deadly epidemics are almost unknown. Not because the virus is not there, it's just that people's immune system works better. And again, it goes back to your third world nations, which they always use as the example to terrify people. When we put all of these things together, we see that there's this whole system of lies and myths that's being perpetrated on the public to scare them to death so that they'll submit to these vaccines. Well, we look today, the average child is receiving 34 inoculations before they attend school. Now, that is very, very dangerous. And the scientific evidence of that danger is absolutely overwhelming. Yet, almost no one is speaking about it publicly. What happens when you overstimulate the immune system in someone? It activates the brain's immune system. And when the brain's immune system becomes activated, it secretes some very toxic chemicals that can destroy brain cells and brain cell connections. Now, if this occurs in a child, there's an added danger, and that is it can interfere with the development of that child's brain. And most people don't understand that most of the brain development in a child takes place after birth. We're unusual in the animal world. Most animals, their brain development is just about finished by the time they're born. Humans, it continues to a great degree up to age 2. And by age 4, only 80% of the brain is formed. And the most important functional part of the brain, that is the prefrontal cortex, is not fully developed until age 26. So here you are assaulting the brain during its most sensitive critical developmental period with mass inoculation. Now, when we do these inoculations in experimental animals to see what happens, we consistently see it alters the development of the brain of the young animals, causing them to have severe problems with what would be in humans, language function, behavior, learning. All of these things are impaired. Well, when we look at children, the same thing is being found. A very high astronomical increase since we've begun this huge program of vaccinations of language problems, learning problems, memory problems, and behavioral problems, and a 600% increase in autism, and a 1,000% increase if we count all of the neural developmental disorders in childhood. And when we look at the experimental results, we see exactly why this occurs. Now, let's take an average child. Let me wait until after the break so I can make this in continuity.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's so important that people understand that doctors really believe in vaccinations, but doctors are never told what Dr. Blaylock's telling you, because Dr. Blaylock goes to the scientific literature, which the doctors don't have time to read and study. Certainly the pediatricians read the pediatric journals. The internist reads the internist journals. And much of the basic, fundamental scientific work is not published there. It's published in discrete journals for the scientists. And that's what we're getting into tonight, is the science behind what's going on today. Far different picture than you're going to hear from your physician. We'll go right ahead, Russell.
Well, this is a period of great interest to me, and I'm doing some very in-depth research into this area at this time. So I'm sharing with you some things that has taken me years of intense study to bring forth. Now, let's take the average child. What happens to that child? Well, a vaccine, the way you make it work is you put the organism that you want to vaccinate the child against, let's say a measles virus or some of the pertussis organisms. If you just put the pertussis organism in the vaccine and inject it in a child, not much happens. So you put what's called immune adjuvants with it. The purpose of these adjuvants is to make your immune system react with great intensity. So they're very irritating chemicals that are added to the vaccine. The most common is aluminum hydroxide or aluminum phosphate, which is a very powerful immune stimulator. Then they'll add mercury. Mercury, while it will disrupt the immune system, can activate it at the same time. And then they can add special fats and lipids and even MSG to vaccines to make the immune reaction very intense. Now, when your child is brought to the pediatrician, you normally think, well, what you would want to do is just give one vaccine per visit and separate it by 6 months or so. So the child will have a minimal effect from that vaccine and time to recover. But what we see in a lot of cases is children are getting as many as 6 to 9 vaccines at one office visit. Now that means that child is getting 6 to 9 full doses of an extremely powerful immune adjuvant. That means a cumulative dose that is absolutely massive. You would never do that to a human being on purpose if you knew what that does to the brain and the rest of the body. In an experimental animal, if you took an equal dose of those 9 vaccines and injected in an experimental animal, you would get significant brain swelling, brain inflammation, disruption of nerve connections, death of neurons, and abnormal development if it was a small animal. This is exactly what's happening in humans. Let's take the case of the child who gets the vaccine, and you bring the child home, and they're screaming at the top of their lungs. You cannot get them quiet. Nothing you do can soothe them, and it may go on for days, and in some cases, this screaming, high-pitched screaming goes on for as much as 2 or 3 months. Now, the pediatrician will tell you, oh, that's just because the vaccine hurt. Now, as a neurosurgeon, I did major operations on a lot of newborn babies. Babies tolerate pain a lot better than adults. I could do major operations on babies, and they wouldn't hardly cry at all. And they were playing in their crib the next day. So it's not the pain. What happens, and we know this from our experimental studies, is that when you do this massive immune stimulation and turn on the brain's immune system, it secretes chemicals into the part of the brain that has to do with fear, anger, an intense emotional response. And that's why that child is screaming and hollering at the top of its lungs, and that nothing can calm that child down. You can reproduce that in an animal by putting microscopic amounts of these immune chemicals
in the brain. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell was simply saying that when you use a vaccine, why you want it to work, so they add alum to it, they put in thimerosal, and although the thimerosal can be a damage, it can also increase, to a degree, the immune response. But we have special immune responses in the brain. There's a special immune system there. And, of course, when you inflame or boost the immunity in the general body, why, you stimulate the part that's in the brain. And certainly in the animal studies, you give multiple vaccinations, as we do to our children. And, of course, with the animals, you can dissect them. And you find you're doing damage. You're destroying brain cells. And certainly what you're doing is causing the secretion of certain toxic products in certain part of the brain that stimulate the crying. And so often children after their vaccinations will be crying and high-pitched cry. And this is because of the inflammation of the brain. And the doctor keeps saying, oh, that's just because the vaccination hurt, that's why they're crying. Then Dr. Russell Blaylock points out that isn't the case at all. It's because you've insulted the brain. You're doing damage to the brain. So make the story up there, Russell.
Right, and what happens in the brain is a special cell that is the brain's immune cell called the microglia. Now, interestingly, what they've discovered in the case of autism, for instance, is that the brain microglia become activated, and they stay activated in the autistic child even into adulthood. There's a study that was reported in the journal Annals of Neurology recently. And in this study, they looked at the autopsy brain of children who had autism all the way up to adults who had autism and died from some other cause. And what they found in every case, there was intense immune activation of these cells in their brain that lasted the full lifetime of that child, all the way into adulthood, which means that the brain is undergoing this immune insult constantly, and that's why you have this severe degree of effect we see in autism. Well, when you look at Alzheimer's disease, we see the very same thing, that these microglia cells are fully activated, producing damage in the adult brain. When we look at Parkinson's disease, we see the same thing. So what we're learning is that all the neurodegenerative diseases, autism, ADD, Down syndrome, all of these diseases, we're saying the same thing. Chronic immune activation inside of the brain that persists. And you can produce the very same thing by giving too many vaccinations or with vaccines that have very powerful immune adjuvants in them. This is absolutely proven. There are numerous studies in which this has been repeated and done and studied carefully to see exactly how these cells are activated, how long they stay activated. For instance, one study found that after the hepatitis B vaccine, the immune activation lasts for as long as 2 years. So there's this intense aggravation of the brain's immune system that we know persists 2 years after the hepatitis B vaccine. Well, that may help explain why they've observed that people who receive the hepatitis B vaccine increase their risk of developing multiple sclerosis some 300% within 3 years of getting the vaccine. That is an astronomical increase in multiple sclerosis to prevent a disease that, if you're not in a high-risk category, in other words, not a drug user, not a hemophiliac who has to take a lot of blood products, or an AIDS patient, you're at almost no risk of developing hepatitis.
And what's even worse, of course, is giving that to our children in the nurseries. I mean, the parents don't know any better, and they give poor mothers just been recovering from, you know, the birth of her child, so a form to sign, and she signs it. And then in the nursery, they're giving that shot, and they're giving it again at 2 months and again at 6 months for a disease that really is not a danger to our children. It's a massive experiment on our children, and that's unconscionable.
Well, it is a massive experiment because we know there's a 300% increase in multiple sclerosis when adults are given this shot. We have no idea what's going to happen to these millions of children who has received it as newborns, because the newborn's immune system is not properly functional and has abnormal immune reactions, so it increases the risk of that child getting an autoimmune disease as an adult. And that's what we're waiting to see. What's going to happen to these children.
Yeah, sort of like the Tuskegee study where they withheld the treatment from the blacks with syphilis just to see what would happen so they could autopsy them when they died. And certainly, I think only about 50 people survived. Of the 400 who started the experiment, survived this macabre, lethal experiment. And of course, nobody was ever punished for killing those black men, which is what they did. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. Pick the story up there, Russell.
Well, and here's another thing that people don't realize. Oftentimes, when you're given childhood vaccines, the vaccine produces more disability, permanent disability, and death than the disease itself. And this is true for hepatitis B. When they looked at hepatitis B incidence in children, it was infinitesimally small. The death rate from taking the hepatitis B vaccine was 16 times higher than the death rate from contracting hepatitis B in a child. 16 times higher getting the vaccine. And this is the kind of nonsense that's going on in this country. And parents aren't aware of it. They're too trusting. They trust the vaccine authorities. They trust the government. They trust the pediatrician that he knows all about these vaccines. The pediatrician does not know these dangers. They are getting their information from the vaccine companies and from their specialty societies. It's not that the pediatrician's an evil person. He just doesn't know. He's trusting these people, just like you're trusting them. And they don't deserve that trust because they're harming people in huge amounts. Now look at tetanus. All of us got a tetanus vaccination when we were children, and many of us get a tetanus every time we go to a hospital with a laceration. In World War II, with all the wounds and the mud and the foxholes, the incidence of tetanus was one case per 200,000 men. That's during wartime in the worst conditions you could possibly imagine. So the risk of you developing tetanus from a wound, it's about 1 in 10 million. If you clean the wound, it's almost guaranteed you're not going to get tetanus. Yet you get a clean laceration from a piece of glass in your house, and you go to the emergency room, they give you a tetanus booster, which is absolute nonsense because you have absolutely zero incidence of getting tetanus from that laceration, particularly if you wash it with soap and water and cover it with a clean bandage before you get to the emergency room. So these are the kind of things that people just don't seem to be grasping, and they need to understand this. That most of these vaccines are not needed. Pertussis vaccine. Almost all of the children that die from pertussis are too young to receive the vaccine in the first place. Children older than that, treated with antibiotics or standard procedures, the death rate is extremely, extremely low.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. My guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's really been going into the fallacy that we've been we've been given according to about vaccines. But before we go on, I want to, of course, to have Dustin Blaylock mention how people can get copies of his letter, how the Newsmax actually publishes this. It comes every month by email. And is it available in hard copy? Do they send it out, or is it all by email?
You can get it both, either hard copy or email.
How can people find out about that?
They can go to www.blaylockreport.com. If they do that, they can get it from Newsmax, or they can go to my website, which is www.russellblaylockmd.com, and they can get it through there.
All right, of course, that's blaylockreport.com, the www.blaylockreport.com, or www, is it Dr. Russell Blaylock, or just
RussellBlaylockMD.com.
RussellBlaylockMD.com. And I look forward to getting the newsletter. I've been getting it for several years, and I always learn something from Dr. Blaylock's newsletter. And we do carry his books, of course, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, and Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And we carry a DVD he has, which we think is excellent, Nutrition and Behavior. That's Nutrition and Behavior. We think it's really, it will give you an entirely different insight into what's going on today and what you need to protect not only your health, but the health of your family and your friends. So with that as a background, let's go ahead. We were talking really about the vaccinations and the fact that certainly the pediatricians, the average doctor, really doesn't know. He's in a routine, and you go into the emergency room, the doctor sees you, you have a laceration, you automatically get a tetanus toxoid booster. Even if it's a clean wound, there's no chance at all of you're getting tetanus. He just goes ahead. It's part of routine. But it's an unnecessary routine, exposing you and your body to unnecessary stimulation of your immune system. So please pick the story up there.
Well, one of the things people need to understand, we hear a lot about mercury in vaccines, but not a lot about aluminum in vaccines. Virtually all the vaccines contain aluminum. It's an immune stimulant, what we call an adjuvant. Now, the aluminum is strongly correlated with a lot of diseases, particularly things like Alzheimer's disease and Lou Gehrig's disease. So we know aluminum is a powerful brain toxin. Now, if you're going and getting a flu shot every year, or if you're getting a tetanus booster, or if your child is getting 9 vaccines at one time and a total of 34, that's 34 doses of aluminum. And it accumulates in that child's brain, and in the adult it accumulates in the adult brain, and it eventually is going to cause some serious problems in that brain. Now, the studies on aluminum toxicity of the brain are extensive. There's literally hundreds of studies that have been done on the toxicity of aluminum to the brain. And there is concern among several experts in aluminum toxicity of the hazard of injecting aluminum in these vaccines. Yet most doctors are completely unaware of this. Your pediatrician is unaware of this and assume that, well, if they're putting it in there, it just must be safe, but that's not true. This is a substantial amount of aluminum being injected inside a child. Now, there's a double standard among pediatricians and obstetricians as well. For instance, in the Journal of American Medical Association 1982, they did a survey of the pediatricians and obstetricians asking them, would you take the new rubella vaccine? Well, 90% of the obstetricians refused to take it, and over two-thirds of the pediatricians refused to take it. And when they asked them why, they said, well, we're afraid of long-term consequences. So for themselves, they wouldn't take the vaccine, but they were promoting mothers to take it and promoting the children to take this very same vaccine that they themselves refused to take. We see the same thing with a lot of treatments that occur in medicine. For instance, oncologists often say that if they ever got cancer, they would never take chemotherapy because they know that in most cases it does not work. So these things are kind of the secrets of medicine that are not shared with the general public. And unfortunately, the media covers none of these stories. Absolutely never covers any of these stories. Instead, they perpetuate myths about the flu vaccine. Now, a few more things about flu vaccine. There's a study done by Dr. Feudenberg, who's an expert in immunology. He's a world-renowned expert immunologist, wrote many of the textbooks. With his colleagues, he did some studies and found that people age 55 and above who take the flu vaccine every year for 5 years in a row increase their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease tenfold. That's 1,000% increase to develop Alzheimer's disease because you're following the recommendations of the CDC. These are the kind of things that endanger your life, your brain, your health, because you're too trusting. Now, when we look at the media is saying, well, gee, 36,000 people, elderly people die every year. You need to get down there and get your flu vaccine. Well, the flu vaccine is also being promoted for all children from age 6 months to 24 months, and 18-year-olds, 16 to 18-year-olds, and then all pregnant women, and then all the elderly. Virtually everyone is told you need to get a flu vaccine. Now, to tell a pregnant woman to take a flu vaccine or a two-part series of flu vaccines every year and to take it while she's pregnant is absolute insanity based on what we know about mercury. And the government's own statistics, own studies, which shows that actually a large percentage of infants are getting more mercury than the safety limit says they should get. They're getting substantially more because these babies are also getting it from any fish products the mother eats. The air pollution has a significant amount of mercury, particularly in certain parts of the country. If you live in the South, if you live in West Texas, you're getting very high mercury levels. You're getting it from dental amalgam. All of these things are in that mother, and then you add a vaccine with even more mercury and aluminum, and we find that the baby's level of mercury is twice as high as the mother. That is, the placenta concentrates the mercury on the baby's side, so that the baby's brain gets more mercury than the mother. And because of the age of the baby, the small body weight, it's much more toxic to that baby's brain than it is to the mother's brain. But both are being harmed. And then, after this baby's born, then you start these series of vaccinations, some of which still have at least some mercury in it. Well, mercury is one of the most powerful brain toxins that's ever been discovered. And it will poison brain cells at doses that are infinitesimally small, less than 5 micromoles, which is an incredibly small amount of mercury, can cause significant brain damage. And this is why we're seeing so many children born with ADD, ADHD, autism, other kinds of language learning problems, behavioral problems. All of these things are starting to mount up because we're just filling them full of these toxins. We also know that toxins have what's called additive or synergistic toxicity. So that when they get the dose of mercury and the dose of aluminum, those two toxins add together, or sometimes it's more than added together, to produce a profound toxicity on the brain. We also know that a child's toxicity varies. Some children are more resistant than others. That's why everybody doesn't develop these problems. Some children have very poor defense systems in their brain, so that when they are exposed to these toxins, it produces profound damage. Others have very good antioxidant systems and protection systems so that they don't have as serious of damage. And that's why we see this huge variability in the effect of these vaccines on children. But from my studies, what we're saying is that virtually every child is affected to some degree. And we're starting to see that now in that children cannot think as well as they could before. And they're having a lot of problem with impulse control. That is, being able to control your impulses to do antisocial things. And that's not by accident. We know that the very parts of the brain that are most damaged by this mercury and most damaged by over-vaccination are indeed the part that helps control your impulses. It also has to do with your language and your memory and your working memory, that is, the ability to learn. So more and more children are having learning disabilities. And when they did a survey around the country, they found that the clinics that are taking care of learning disabled children have a huge backlog because there's so many children with learning disabilities. Well, interestingly, this came out in the famous Simpsonwood Conference, which was a secret conference to examine this problem of this dramatic increase in these language and learning problems in children, and to find out, was it related to vaccination and particularly the mercury in the vaccine? Well, their conclusion was that yes, indeed, their statistical evidence clearly indicated that there was a dose-response relationship between the number of vaccines containing mercury and these behavioral language learning problems in these children. It was clear-cut. They argued it for days, and all of them had to agree, yes, this is a real effect. These children are getting a large dose of mercury. The larger the dose, the worse the damage. Interestingly, they kept this entire conference results secret. There was no press conferences saying, gee, look what we've discovered. We need to change this vaccine policy. They never said any such thing. 2 years later, the group that did the study changed the results, wrote it up in the Journal of Pediatrics, and said, we didn't find any connection between the vaccines and learning and language difficulty in children.
And I know you were eventually one of the congressmen was able to get a copy of, they actually marked the transcript of what happened, a secret, top secret or something of the sort, but didn't you actually get a copy of one of the congressmen who actually almost had to force the CDC to release that because they don't want the public to know what they're doing to our children?
Right. I contacted Congressman Dave Weldon of Florida. He sent me a copy of the Simpson-Wood Conference, the entire report. I read every word of it, reread it, analyzed it, and wrote a report on it, which is on the Internet. You can get it from www.mercola.com, his website, in which I analyzed this and showed some very shocking things that in present at this conference were five of the major manufacturers of vaccines. They never said a word throughout the entire conference. They just listened. They had a representative from the World Health Organization. So we had all these major people there at this conference who knew what they found, admitted that it was profound, and even one of the conferees stood up and said, last night my granddaughter had our first male child of our family. And I do not want that child to receive a vaccine with mercury in it until we find out what's going on. So he was terrified about his own grandchild's health and did not want his grandchild to get the vaccine, but then at the end of the conference kept it all secret from the rest of America so you could vaccinate your child and run the risk of your child having these terrible things happen.
Now, I think it's even more unconscionable is we're financing this, sending these mercury-laden vaccines to third-world countries. Supposedly, they've taken most of it out of the childhood vaccines here in the United States, although not out of the vaccines that are given to children, just the vaccines for childhood diseases, measles, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, but not out of the influenza, because that, of course, is not a childhood disease. So they still have the mercury there, but we're giving the vaccines laden with mercury and to vaccinations for childhood diseases throughout the rest of the world. So why do we take it out of the United States and leave it in for the children in Africa? Well, of course, part of that, is my understanding, is that the mercury also has a profound impact on fertility. And after all, aren't there too many little black children in the world? At least the attitude seems to be of some of the elite. A very racist attitude.
Well, of course, this is something that's been scientifically proven, that mercury severely interferes with the testes in the male and the ovaries of the females, suppressing fertility. Plus the vaccination effects themselves on the mental capacity. So if you go to Africa and you give all of these vaccines to children who have poor nutrition, the damage is infinitely higher than if you give the same vaccine to a child who has good nutrition. And in fact, in the early days when they first brought vaccines to the Aborigines and Australia and the African children, what they found is there was a huge death rate. 30-40% of the children, in some cases 50%, were dying from the vaccine. And they couldn't figure out why. Well, they discovered eventually it was because of vitamin A deficiency, that if a child is vitamin A deficient and zinc deficient and you vaccinate them, it will kill a large number of those children. They don't tell parents that in this country either. I mean, there's plenty of poor children in this country who are vitamin deficient and zinc deficient, and when they develop have a vaccine, they can die just as well. Plus all the parasitic infections overseas, that increases their risk of vaccination as well because it produces a profound nutritional deficiency. So you're taking the child, if he survives the vaccine, then he's got mental impairment. What chance does that child have to compete in the world, even if it survives? Well, it doesn't have a very good chance of ever competing in a highly competitive world. So, you know, and that's what shocked me about the representative from the World Health Organization being at this Simpson-Wood Conference, and he never had a negative word to say about their funding. just as you brought out, this is a terrible assault on defenseless children in third world nations, as well as the children in our own nation.
And really, the important thing is for people in the listening audience to find out what's really going on. That Simpson Wood Conference report certainly is up on Dr. Percola's website. Pull it down. Read it, study it, copy it. Get it in other people's hands. And ask, why did they mark this top secret? Why did one of the congressmen really have to almost threaten the CDC to get it released? Why are they concealing the truth from the American people and from people throughout the world? We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Russell, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I would absolutely emphasize, when you're thinking about the children, because of the flu vaccine recommendations, the baby, if it's developing inside of the mother, is going to get a huge dose of mercury from the pregnant mother getting vaccinated with the flu vaccine. Then at age 6 months, the child is going to start getting another flu vaccine. And then all the way to age 24 months, it gets more flu vaccine. So this child, even before it's born, has gotten this huge dose of mercury. And no one's paying attention to that outside of this secret world of research that never gets into the press. So mothers and fathers need to take the initiative themselves, write your congressman, and refuse these vaccines. If you agree with this, your responsibility is to protect your child, because if this happens and your child is devastated, you'll live with the guilt, you'll live with the problem the rest of your life, just as your child will. So as a parent, it is our responsibility to protect our children, to find out about these things, to research this ourselves, and not just take the authorities' word on this. But there are moves at hand to make it where all these vaccines are going to be forced on the public against their will. They want to make this a national vaccine program, which you cannot refuse, and we need to stop that dead in its tracks.
And we have to ask yourself why they would do this if they knew that it was harmful. And, of course, our recurrent answer is because there are people who really have no concern about the health of your children. And the same people are directing the vaccination program, who directed the AIDS program and allowed this epidemic, what I refer to as an unnecessary epidemic, to kill over 570,000 Americans dead, another 50 to 100,000 infected, in what was truly an unnecessary epidemic. Why would you want to trust the health of your children or anybody's health to these same people working in the U.S. Public Health Service, working in the Centers for Disease Control, who knew exactly what they were doing when they blocked an effective public health approach to the AIDS epidemic? Why would anybody want to block the procedures that would save the lives of 570,000 Americans? And of course, we don't even want to talk about what's happening in Africa today as this epidemic devastates the continent. Well, I believe they're evil people. Russell Blaylock, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you later this week when we're going to be talking about MSG.
Well, thank you, Stan, and God bless you.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, we hope many of you will want to get the tape or CD of this program, because during the breaks, we do continue talking, and there's so much information ready to get in. And then, of course, we would suggest that we have a 4-tape set on vaccinations. We have an excellent VHS. It's called Dr. Ayoub's A Discussion of Influenza Vaccine. It's a talk Dr. Ayoub gave about 2 years ago at our yearly conference. And you need to understand the dangers of the mercury. You need to understand the dangers, certainly to fertility. They know this. This is one reason they're pushing this in Africa, because the people who are pushing the vaccinations in Africa, Bill Gates and the others, are in favor of population control. And they will tell you, oh, why we want to vaccinate the children in Africa to save their lives. Why would you want to vaccinate the children if you are in favor of population control? Well, of course, you need to understand there's an entirely different agenda, and you'll be fascinated to hear Dr. Abe's talk. It is incidentally available on Google. You can Google in Dr. Abe and see it there, but we hope that you'll want to get a copy of the DVD of the VHS from us. It is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have two books on vaccines by Neil Miller, and you can request those. They're rather inexpensive. We have the book, The Virus and the Vaccine, going into the polio, the story of the polio epidemic, and of course the virus, the cancer-producing virus that was in the polio vaccine, and they knew it was in the polio vaccine, and they gave it to countless millions of Americans and countless people throughout the world. And then we wonder why the incidence of cancer is rising. In 1903, 3% of the people, 3 people in 100 got cancer. It's up to 50% today. What is this really all about? Well, we have a great 4-tape set. It's a series of interviews with Dr. Dennegan, who back in 1969 heard the plan laid out by Dr. Richard Day, who at that time was the former medical director of Planned Parenthood, who talked about the planned population control agenda of the elite. He called them the order who ruled the country, and he was part of that movement. Dr. Day readily admitted that. We have the 4 tapes where they talk about creating new diseases, suppressing treatments for cancer. It is the most incredible 4 tapes we have, and we have a lot of incredible ones. We have the transcript of that, too. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. The New Order of the Barbarians. So we have the 4 tape set on vaccines. We have the 4 tape set, The New Order of the Barbarians. We have a 4 tape set on population control. DVD called Planned Population Reduction. We have a monograph on the population control agenda, monograph which touches on vaccines and, of course, why they really outlawed DDT. I mean, it had nothing to do with the fact that it was harmful to people. In fact, it actually prevented cancer. The people who worked in the plants where they manufactured the DDT had almost no cancer at all. It was just saving so many lives from malaria. And about 100 billion people, mostly blacks of third world nations, have died of malaria during the last 33 years since the United States banned DDT and discouraged its use. And now suddenly the World Health Organization has said, oh shucks, we've discovered it's really not that dangerous, and we're going to allow, in fact encourage, it being sprayed in the homes and rooms where people sleep at nighttime. And 100 million people have died unnecessarily. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website is radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. We hope you'll go there. You've got our material. We hope you'll support Radio Liberty and help us expand our outreach out across America. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for our revival in this country. Pray for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here again, coming there from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the struggle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for the second hour this evening, another one of our favorite guests. You're just so fortunate this evening to have Dr. Russell Blaylock the first hour, and the second hour, our good friend Ralph Epperson, who I've known probably for, the better part of 30 years. I think it was about 1980. He came up to Santa Cruz. We filmed some videos with him. How long ago was that you came up to Santa Cruz?
That was 1987, Dr. Stan. So maybe not 30 years, but at least 20.
At least 20 years ago. Well, certainly we've known Ralph for 20 years. Time flies when you're having fun. And Ralph is certainly one of the world's leading experts on masonry and what masonry is all about. And I was just thinking, as we were wondering how to introduce this program, to point out that you cannot understand anything going on today. You can't understand what's going on in America, or what's going on in the Middle East, or what's going on in Nepal, unless you understand there is a continuing world revolution. And, of course, the world revolution really began back in 1775, 1776, with the American Revolution that had strong Masonic ties. And, of course, here we find people like Lafayette coming to America and to aid in the American Revolution. Now, why was Lafayette here? Why was he made a general? Because he was a Mason, and we found officers coming from Germany to help in the American Revolution. Were Masons, and they were actually instrumental in this whole world revolutionary movement. And after American Revolution succeeded, then we had a revolution in France, and that became the prototype of all the subsequent revolutions. American Revolution at least had a strong Christian backing to it, but the Masons were here. But in the French Revolution, it was primarily the Masons, the Jacobins, those people, the Illuminists, who were interested in destroying religion and, of course, replacing it with a new world order and a new world religion. And, of course, out of the French Revolution, which was primarily instigated by secret Masonic lodges, it had infiltrated, infiltrated by the Illuminati, by the Jacobins. It was an effort to destroy the existing social order. And the French Revolution was simply the first in a series of revolutions that were to sweep all of Europe and are continuing to this day. Following the First World War, why they destroyed the German Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the Russian Empire. And that was what it was all about, destroying the existing social order. And then after the Second World War, it brought about the revolution in China, and of course the transfer of the control of Eastern Europe to the communists, who were a byproduct of this revolution. The Russian Revolution was part of the continuing world revolution. And then the Cuban Revolution, the revolution in Nicaragua, certainly in South Africa, in Rhodesia. And most recently, the revolution in Nepal, which was actually helped and aided by your State Department, which sided with the Maoists and brought the Maoists to power in the existing regime. It is a continuing revolution that all began with the French Revolution, the American Revolution, but behind that were the occult forces. And if you doubt that, you need to read the book we carry, written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, who talks about, contrary to everything you've been taught, the world revolution has nothing to do with the Enlightenment and Voltaire and Rousseau, but the occult, and of course the aristocrats who moved their lighted candles from Christian altars to Masonic altars, and working through secret societies, created the revolution that continues to this day. Well, Ralph, what sort of influence does Masonry have in the world today?
Well, I think you summarized it just a few minutes ago. They claim in their own literature to be the most powerful organization in the land and to ordain kings and shape the destinies of worlds, and that's exactly true. This nation was set up by the Masons. You can find that evidence on the back of our dollar bill. It's very easy to do. You can find it in the Constitution, where they set up a tyrannical government in the United States under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. That was done. I can't find any opposition to that. Possibly Thomas Paine, but if he did object to it, he didn't put it in writing, but I've read where some people claim that he was the only one who objected to that passage. So it's all over the place. And I remember back in 1985 when I found the first book I read on the subject, I was hard to believe that so many people had missed what these people were saying in their own literature. So I started researching into the Masonic Lodge and toured the country in 1985 with the speech entitled Secret Societies and the New World Order, and I exposed the back of the dollar bill and the Masonic Lodge and the Weishaupt and the Illuminati, etc., when there was very few people talking about this. So we know that where we have been, and we now know where we're going, and I can be honest with you, I'm sure you know as well, Dr. Stan, it's not going to be very pleasant.
Well, I think the amazing thing is that almost all of the conservative organizations and almost all of the religious organizations in the United States refuse to talk about this or play it down. And of course, you know, they will talk about the Christian part of our country, the Christian heritage, which certainly has played an important part. But they totally ignored the occult influence that was here when America was founded. In fact, it was even here shortly after the Pilgrims and certainly the Puritans landed here and came to this country. And these secret societies at that time, of course, they were the Rosicrucians. But of course, if you go through Masonry, you will actually find that certain of the levels of Masonry, certain stages of Masonry, refer to both the Templars, Knights Templar, and the Rosicrucians. Because modern-day Masonry is simply a continuation of the ancient mystery religions, which were embraced both by the Knights Templar and by the Rosicrucians and by the Illuminati and by the Jacobins, all dedicated to one thing, creation of a new world order and a new world religion. Once you understand that, you can understand that what's going on over in the Middle East today is simply a great diversion. Perhaps it'll lead to World War III. And that's how they'll bring it about. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Ralph Epperson, who studied this whole movement extensively, and so often you'll hear the Masons say, well, we're not a secret society, we're just a society with secrets. How do you counter that sort of a remark?
Well, I just say then, please invite me to one of your rituals then. If it's not secret, then let me come. In fact, why don't you allow your wife to go? Your wives. They don't go. Your children can't go. And I wonder why, if it's not secret.
And, of course, it's amazing how they will distort facts, and they will say, well, of course, you know, there's nothing secret about. Well, of course, we do have these rituals, but, I mean, they really have no meaning. Of course, we're not a religion. How do you answer that when they insist we're not a religion?
Well, they've got their own God. They call him the Supreme Architect of the Universe. During their ceremonies and rituals, they pray to this God. They have a priest. They have an altar. They have a religious service. They sing. That's what you call a religion. And that's by the very, those things are the very things that are the accoutrements of religion, the trappings. So they have a religion, and they are. And the goal of they start with the premise that you've got to believe in a supreme being. By the way, I watched a video last night on television about the Masons, and they said you have to have a belief in God. That's not true. You have to believe in a supreme being, which is undefined. You are the one, the initiate is the one that defines that term, not the Masons. So I believe that you could believe in a fire plug as being a supreme being and get in. And that's true.
Well, of course, as you get into a higher level of Masonry, though, Well, you begin to find out who that God is. I mean, this is the thing. They actually brag in Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike's book, how they intentionally deceive the people who are brought into the lodge, the apprentices, they refer to them. They intentionally deceive them and lead them away from the truth, which is the light. And they always keep going back to the light. It's always about the light.
Well, let's start with that very briefly for those that are new to this idea that the Masons have something to hide. During the first three degrees, which are called the Blue Lodge, blue like the color of the sky, Blue Lodge, as the initiate, are completely unprepared for what's about to befall you. You walk through a ritual, your eyes closed, with the rope around your neck, with your shirt unbuttoned, and your pants leg rolled off, and I think your shoes are gone, or at least maybe one of them is gone.
You're wearing a blindfold, aren't you?
Yes. And that's intended to show you that you are in darkness and that we're going to show you what the light is. And during the three steps, the first three degrees, the vice president, I'll call him that, they have another name for him, just to make sure you understand, it's the equivalent of the vice president, second in charge, he takes the initiative to the first in charge.
The first in charge is the worshipful master, isn't he?
Yeah, I was just trying to avoid all that, just to let people know that it's like the equivalent of the president, the number one man in charge. And he asked the second man in charge, what do you ask for this initiate? The initiate doesn't answer. The vice president does for him. Light in the first, more light in the second, and further light in the third. And then at the third degree at the end, they tell you that the light represents the true knowledge of deity. Unquote. The implication is that you and your beliefs in your church or your synagogue or your temple, whatever it is, where you go to your services, that you don't get the true knowledge of deity. Only the Masons have that. But that's where it's left. That's it. That's as far as you go. They never do, as far as I can tell, explain to you what that light is or who this true knowledge of deity is. So then they say you can learn that if you go on into the 32nd degree, which is 29 more than the first three, of course. So then at the 19th degree, you were given 14th degree, you were given a book called A Morals and Dogma. Morals and Dogma, which you just mentioned a few minutes ago. And in the 14th degree, you read about Lucifer being the light bearer. Is it he who bears the light? Doubt it not. Now notice, they have not told you that Lucifer is the true knowledge of deity, but you are to make the connection. I ask for light, they tell me the light represents the true knowledge of deity, and then they tell me in the 14th degree where that light comes from. Lucifer, the light bearer. Well, Lucifer just happens to be the name of the devil in the Bible, Satan. So you are to connect these three pieces of a chain into a chain. Number one, you ask for light. Number two, light represents the true knowledge of deity. And number three, Lucifer is the light bearer. And then you're supposed to say, oh my goodness, I see what they're saying. Lucifer is the true knowledge of deity. He is the grand architect of the universe. And that's where you're supposed to take it. And one last comment while we're on that thought. Pike later says in one another of his books that if you don't see the secret, you are ignorant. They've told you enough to see it. And they're not going to tell you any more because it would be foolish to tell you more. But they've told you enough to see it. And if you don't see it, you are ignorant. That's what a brother calls another brother. Isn't that nice?
Well, you know, I think the fascinating thing is if you read Morals and Dogma and you don't know what they're talking about, you get totally confused. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of history there. And of course, they take you now, you know, back from the very beginning of these mystery religions and alchemists. What were alchemists? Well, they told us alchemists really wanted to create dross into gold. But that is only the outward part of that. I mean, they didn't work really trying to create gold. They were trying to make the individual, to transform the individual. It was not they were going to actually make gold. They were going to transform the individual. But how did you transform the individual? Well, of course, down through the ages, people have always tried to understand the world. And of course, Albert Pikes talks about the Zoroastrians, about the Manichaeans, about the Marcions, about the Gnostics, about the Kabbalah. They all were really talking about religion. But when you understand that the basis of all of these, whether it be the Zoroastrians or the Marcions or the Manichaeans or the Kabbalah or the Gnostics, it is the belief that there are two gods. There is the good God and there's the bad God. There's the God of light, there is the God of darkness. And they worship the true God, we Christians worship the other God. The bad God. And once you can begin to understand that, then you can begin to understand what Albert Pike is really writing about, and suddenly all the pages of morals and dogmas suddenly are open to you, and you begin to understand that they believe that they have the true God. They worship him, and that God is Lucifer.
That's great. And one more thing, while we're there, Dr. Stan, let's talk about what Albert Pike wrote in Legenda. He said that to believe that the universe was created out of nothing was to believe a monstrous absurdity. Those are his exact words. So if you believe the universe was created out of nothing, you believe in a monstrous absurdity. The first 10 words of the book of Genesis in the Bible are, "And God created the heavens and the earth in the beginning." In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So that means that the universe was created out of nothing, or there would have been no beginning. So what he just did was tell you that they regard the act of creation to be non-existent. The universe has always been here, and there was no creation. Now, I can prove, and it's very easy to do, that statement by Pike is absolutely absurd. It is the monstrous absurdity, because you can prove, as I've done in my little booklet called God Exists, I can prove using science and logic and reason that God does exist and that there was a beginning. There had to be a beginning. And the truth of that is in energy. Energy had to have a beginning because it's slowly burning it out. That's the second law of thermodynamics. And if that is a law, that means that someday the universe will be in what they call a heat equilibrium. Temperature will be the same all over, but notice that hasn't happened yet. So this beginning had to be in a relatively short time ago. So Pike, the monstrous absurdity is not that you believe in a created universe, but that you believe in no created universe. That's the monstrous absurdity.
Well, I think the problem is that we have some of the most powerful and wealthy people in the world who embrace this philosophy, and if it's not Masonry, it's another one of the parallel secret societies like Skull and Bones or the Bohemian Grove or the Theosophy or the Rosicrucianism or the Lucius Trust. They all tie into this world movement, and of course they have front organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderbergers, of course, Club of Rome, but they are all working towards the same goal, and behind all of the front organizations are, of course, Masonry and the spectrum of secret societies. And then you get into the background of the CFR. It came out of a secret society created by Cecil Rhodes, who himself was a Mason, as was his right-hand man, and, of course, another member of the original secret society, a man named William Stead, came out of Theosophy and out of the occult and spiritualism. But they're all, of course, looking for the answers to mankind, and they're trying to tap into the other dimension and the power of the prince of this world, the prince of darkness.
By the way, Dr. Stan, there's two things we might mention that are relatively current. Gerald Ford just died. Let's talk about him, and let's also talk about the man who played Kramer on the Seinfeld program. I never watched that show, so I don't know, but I do know that Kramer, and I don't even know, I can't remember his name, but Kramer just got into a hassle with, he was on at a comedy club, and apparently some black men were heckling him, and he got into a tirade about how evil black people were, and they were slaves and everything else. He was very bitter and very angry about their interrupting his program. It just so happens that when you do a search of this man on the internet, you find out that Kramer the actor, not the TV character, but Kramer the actor himself is a 32nd degree Mason.
Well, of course, this is a racist organization. They wouldn't let any black folks in their organization. Black folks have to have their own branches of Masonry. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about Masonry and the fact that if you look into the background of modern-day Masonry, you'll find that, I think, of our last 12 presidents, certainly four of them were Masons. One of them took the 33rd degree when he was in the Oval Office. His name was Ronald Reagan. And then, of course, Bill Clinton was the demolay, the highest, and he was the ranking demolay in the country, which is why, of course, the Masons in the United States Senate all rallied together, even crossed the aisle from Republicans so they could vote for the Democrats to protect their fellow occultist, demolay, Bill Clinton, from being impeached. And it was interesting to see who the Republicans were that went over to the Democrats to protect Bill Clinton.
Yes. Well, back to Gerald Ford, he just, as you know, passed away three, 4 weeks ago, whatever it was. And Gerald Ford was hailed as a great peacemaker, a great president, everything else. But the man, in my mind, was framed an innocent man in Lee Harvey Oswald. Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission, and there's no question that John Kennedy was murdered by a conspiracy and not Lee Harvey Oswald. It's a matter of proof. In fact, there's a photograph in the Warren Commission that shows you a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald on the first floor at the time of the first shot, so he couldn't be upstairs. That means that since it was in the Warren Commission, that Gerald Ford knew that, and Gerald Ford framed an innocent man, Lee Harvey Oswald. And it just so happened that Gerald Ford and Earl Warren and Richard Russell and J. Edgar Hoover, the key players in the Warren Commission and the investigation of the assassination after it was over, were all Masons. Isn't that interesting? And he later became president because he did a nice job in the Warren Commission.
And he was well rewarded for his treachery, but that is never brought up by the control media. Nope. Any more than most of the things we're talking about tonight would ever be mentioned in the major media. Well, I think it's so very important that people understand the influence of Masonry at every level of our society today, working within our courts. And if you happen to have a Masonic judge, or you have to have Masons on the jury, and the person who is suing you or bringing charges against you is a Mason, you don't have a chance. And when you have a secret society, you cannot get a fair trial. That's the problem, and nobody ever wants to tell that.
You know, the Masons are very proud of George Washington, but the first president, but they failed to point out that John Quincy Adams, I think, was like the fourth or the sixth president, was very, very critical of the Masons. He was, in fact, angrily so. He wrote the letters that have been reprinted, just vilifying the Masonic Lodge and into how evil they were and what they were up to in this nation. And he said that this nation could not exist unless we eliminated the Masonic order. But, of course, he wasn't successful, and they're still there. They're around today, like you said. Ronald Reagan became an honorary 33rd in the White House just before he left office. Now, what was he doing that for? Just 6 months before Ronald Reagan took the, whatever they went through, the letters and the articles aren't very clear, but we know he became an honorary because the Masons have acknowledged it, and he acknowledged it in a letter. But just 6 months before that, the Church of England was very critical of the Masonic Lodge and that Christians shouldn't be members. Yet Ronald Reagan claimed to be a Christian, but he became an honorary Mason. I wonder why.
Well, because he was very deeply involved in astrology. I just finished reading the book called What Does Jones Say, written by Nancy Reagan's astrologer.
So wasn't it...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about the Masonic influence in our society today, and maybe if we can get back to the discussion of the influence of Masonry on our courts and our judicial system, and the fact that when you have people who've sworn an oath to protect one another, and of course even to let one of their fellows go if he's guilty of both either treason or murder, how can you expect to get an honest trial? This is why you cannot have a free society. And a secret society that permeates every aspect of our nation today. So pick the story up there, Ralph.
Well, yeah, there was a story in one of the books I read about Andrew Johnson, who was the man who took over after President Lincoln was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth, who, by the way, happened to be a Mason. President Johnson was visiting with Albert Pike, and there was a general, I think by the name of Granger, I think his name was, in the room with the three of them together. And they had a long conversation, and the general came out and testified under oath that the man that President Johnson was talking to was Albert Pike, and he said he felt like Albert Pike was the president's superior. Now, wait a minute. When you're the president of the United States, you're the superior. No. General Granger said he thought that Albert Pike was the president's superior, and that's very true because Johnson was only a 32nd degree Mason, and Albert Pike was a 33rd. And when you, I have a copy of the application that you sign when you decide to go on to from the third degree through fourth, and then up to the 32nd. It says you will obey every summons given to you by a 33rd degree Mason. That means that Johnson, and any president who's a Mason, is not our supreme commander. He is obligated to take orders from the 33rd degree council. Any 33rd degree Mason. Now, what does that mean about our nation?
And have you ever gotten a question to any of the degrees above the 33rd degree?
Dr. Stan, you know, people keep telling me about this, and I know that I read years ago in Mackey's encyclopedia that there's two orders in France, I think. They're Rite of Mizraim and one of Memphis or something.
Right.
92 or 96 or whatever it is. But I'll say this, Dr. Stan, I am convinced from my own research of their literature that the 33rd degree council runs everything, including the 96th degree. So that's all window dressing. The 33rd degree council, in their own literature, says they are the mother jurisdiction of the world. They are the mother council of the world. That means they're the ones running the show. And one of the evidences of that is that statue of Albert Pike in Washington, D.C., I when I was there in 1990 at a conference about Masonry, it was called by a bunch of authors like myself who were researching the Masonic Lodge. I went to see the statue, and the statue is of Albert Pike, and on the base of it, it says that he was the leader of the worldwide Masonic movement. He was a 33rd degree Mason, and he was the leader of all of Freemasonry. So I believe that means that the 33rd degree council runs everything. You can have 96 or 4,000 degrees. The 33rd, I believe, runs the whole show.
Well, of course, there in Washington, D.C. is the House of the Temple, where Albert Pike's bones are interred. And of course, right in our nation's capital is the center of modern-day masonry. Is that where the 33rd degree masons meet, or do they still meet in the South?
As far as I know, they meet at least in that temple. But once again, no one knows because we can't get in there. They are secret. I've been challenging Masons to a debate anytime they want to, and if they say it's not secret in my books that I write, I ask them to invite me to one of their rituals. I want to see it for sure. Show me. But I've never gotten an invitation, Dr. Stan. I don't quite understand that.
I think you know, and I know, that they are not allowed, of course, to tell the truth about their rituals. They're not allowed to tell you what their secrets are. They have sworn, you know, with horrible, horrible punishments, if they were ever to reveal any of the secrets of Masonry. And they know very well that Masons get killed who actually, you know, do tell the truth. I've had 32nd degree Masons who've dropped out of Masonry. And, of course, when I've asked them to come on the radio to talk about it, and even though they've sworn and renounced their oaths, they live in constant fear. Because once you've sworn those oaths, and you realize that you've sworn those oaths to the devil, why, you always fear that, of course, they're going to come after you. Even though you've become a Christian, of course, the thing is that when you really are a Christian, you have to realize you don't have to fear the devil. But it's the only protection any of us have against the prince of this world and his agents who work at every level of our society today. Most Masons have no idea what Masonry is about, but there's a small group who do. Is that pretty accurate?
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about Masonry, its influence in, here in America, its influence on the history of our nation, and, of course, where it is leading us today. And, of course, actually the fact that modern-day Masonry is simply the continuation of the ancient mystery religions. And whether it would be the Gnostics or whether it would be the Illuminati, whether it would be the Templars or the Rosicrucians or the Kabbalists, they are all talking about the same God. And, of course, the fact that there are two gods, the good God and the bad God, and they believe they worship the good God, who gives man total freedom. Of course, that's a lie, but it doesn't matter. They believe it, they give their lives for that purpose. And they're usually very, very well rewarded for turning their back upon the God of the Bible. So actually, of course, as you've debated the Masons through the years, and I know you've been on even on television talking about this, do you think that more and more people are beginning to understand the danger that Masonry poses for the maintenance of our freedom here?
Yes. By the way, Dr. Stan, if I may just mention this, someone put one of my videos onto the Internet. And if I may, I'd like to tell you, there's no cost, no obligation. I don't make any money on this. I don't have any. I'm not the one that put it on there. But if you go to Google and then click over to on the top line where it says videos, you click on that, and then a new little search engine, little box shows up. Type in America's Secret Destiny. With an apostrophe, America's Secret Destiny, and then go or click on it or enter whatever it is, and suddenly it'll go to that location, and it'll start a two-hour video called America's Secret Destiny. I think I made it in 1988, but it's there. It's 2 hours long, and it's getting a lot of play and a lot of great interest. I'm getting very nice comments from people who go there and watch it. And by the way, it covers the Masonic Lodge and the America's Secret Destiny. What is, people say, I didn't know we had a secret destiny. Yes, we do. The Masons are the ones that say it.
In fact, we carry a book written by Manly P. Hall called The Secret Destiny of America. Now, we do not carry that in our regular list. In fact, people have to actually request it. Because it is only for researchers. We don't want people to think that in any way we approve of the message. But I know you're well acquainted with Manly P. Hall and his writings. The Secret Destiny of America. And, of course, I'm sure it's very similar to America's Secret Destiny.
Yes, I actually, there's more to the story than Albert and Annabelle told us.
I put my
video out for it, is to show you just how serious the problem is. We've had a secret destiny since this nation was founded. And the evidence of that is on the back of our dollar bill. Those two circles are the Great Seal of the United States, and they contain our secret destiny.
All right, fine. Before we unveil it, Ralph developed that idea in just a moment. America does have a secret destiny. In fact, certainly George Bush talked about that in the next to the last paragraph of his second inaugural speech. That was the 20th of January, 2005, and where he said, you know, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, when our soldiers fell row on row in pursuit of a union based upon liberty, when our people marched in righteous indignation beneath the banner of freedom now, or they were acting on an ancient hope that's meant to be fulfilled, and of course, that's esoteric writing. You put an idea at the beginning and the end of the sentence, and then you fill in the middle with a lot of things to confuse people because they want to confuse us. But the true purpose, true statement was, when our founders declared the new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that's meant to be fulfilled. Well, we've got Henry calling from England, and I don't want to keep him on the line. Henry, how are you tonight?
yeah, hello?
How are you tonight?
Hi, hello. Okay. Yeah, here you have Everson on. I know he was a friend of William Cooper. Here's the thing. I was going to ask him this. In Kessinger Publishing, they used to put out a catalog. Now it's just strictly on the web. They have a 44-degree Rites of Memphis. I think, have you heard of that book or seen that? Also, there used to be another book called The Deadly Deception by somebody who
Jim Shaw.
Gives the right, and then they said they converted to Christianity or something?
Yes, to answer your second question, if I may.
Okay.
The book was written by Jim Shaw and Tom McKinney.
Okay.
It's called The Deadly Deception. Jim Shaw, between his 32nd degree and 33rd degree, became a Mason.
He became a Christian.
Forgive me. Yes, he was a Mason. Thank you. And became a Christian, and he went to Washington, D.C. for the 33rd, and he told you what happened. And how they...
I never read that book. I never see it, but that you may have known. What is it with the 33rd degree anyway? What is the rights of... Well, you don't have to go into detail, but I can't find that book anymore.
No, he died very, very shortly after that book was published.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
You know, there's another guy named Robert Knight or something with Knight. It sounds like Robert Knight.
Right. He wrote a number of books, and he's dead, too.
Right. He's mysteriously died. He wrote two books, and he died?
Right.
One of those books was written about Jack the Ripper, who was a Mason, and he took orders from the Queen of England to kill those prostitutes. Down in, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the place, but that area, and he got away with it. Of course, the Masons inside the Scotland Yard and the police department and whatever else they have in England made sure that he got away with it.
Henry, it's very dangerous sometimes to write about this sort of thing and to talk about it. I believe that God has been protecting Ralph Epperson. I believe God's protecting me. And I hope you'll pray for his protection and for ours as well. But you're absolutely right. Now, the first question you asked about was this book on the rites of Mithras and Mithraeum. Are you acquainted with the book, Henry?
Well, 44 degrees, something or something like that.
44 degrees.
You're asking me?
Yes,
Well, yes. No, I'm not familiar with that book. As I said before, I don't think this rite has any significance because I believe the 33rd degree runs the entire organization, all of Freemasonry, and the confirmation that is on the statue of Albert Pike, because it says that he was the leader of the worldwide Masonic movement. That's everybody, including the Rite of Misery.
Right. And a 33rd degree is the highest honorary degree of the Scottish Rite, but of the York Rite, like Ted Turner, you have only 13 degrees. It's a shorter
Yes, but
distance.
But they, too, take orders to obey the 33rd degree.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Scottish Rite.
I thought
they're
like equal strength, and once you get to Knights Templar or 33rd degree, they just work together. I see.
And Henry, my wife just mentioned that we do carry copies of The Deadly Deception. We still have some, so we probably are one of the last sources of that book. You can get it to Radio.
Now, let me ask you something. Is there any way somebody could write stuff like this? I mean, maybe the reason why Everson may not have gotten killed is because he didn't actually belong to it.
Well,
you know, I seem to be the ones that usually are a member that are in it and get to that degree, and then they write the book and they get killed.
That's
but the
right.
ones that are outside of it, it seems to be different. Or am I wrong?
There are other books that we have that are written by people who are trying to expose the occult, and they've met from a very, very serious, very accidents. There was a man who wrote a series of books on the occult hierarchy, the occult... agenda, the occult. There were three books he wrote. He was a Cambridge scholar, and he wrote the third book, and that was the end of him. So these things happen. In fact, we're having Ed Decker on later this week, and they've tried to poison him several times. But I don't know.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Okay, fine. Well, Henry, thanks very much for calling.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
Oh, wait. Give the phone number, too, where to get the book catalog, too.
1-800.
And give the number, too, because my letters of my telephone thing are sort of sketched off, so I can only go by numbers as opposed to names.
800-544-8927.
Okay,
800-544-8927, or if you prefer, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we truly are at war today.
Okay.
Hey, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Henry. He wasn't from England. He was from New England. So before I go on, though, I want first to have Ralph get out his webpage and how people can get in touch with him and get a free book that he offers. The free book is called A Book Review of Morals and Dogma. And let me tell you, it will really open your eyes as to what this is all about. So go ahead, Ralph. Let's get your website out. And you put out your telephone number if you want to.
Okay, I have an 800 number that people can call. I think it's only good in the United States and Canada if there's any people living outside those two nations. But anyway, if you want to call me, I'll be happy to talk to you. It's 800-422-3888. 800-422-3888. And that's Publius Press, my business. I'll answer the phone. It's nighttime here in Arizona, so tomorrow or any time over the weekend, call me, or even early evening. If you want to go to my website, it's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, dash, Epperson, E as in Edward, P-P as in Peter, E-R-S-O-N.com, Ralph-Epperson.com, and I've got my website. One more thing, if I may, Dr. Stan, I've got a book out on Jesse James, the famous outlaw, who, by the way, was also a 33rd degree Mason and was actually elected to the Senate of the United States from Montana for one term, 1901 to 1907. Jesse James, the famous outlaw, was a United States Senator. If you want that, if you want to just look at it, if nothing else, look at the material on the website. It's Senator Jesse James, all one word, SenatorJesseJames.com. Go there and you can look at the material. It's an incredible story. Jesse James was a United States Senator.
All right, fine. In fact, we've done a number of interviews with Ralph on that. I don't want to get into that subject, but there's a place over in Nevada. It's called Clark County. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
And it's named after, of course, the man that the name that Jesse James took after, of course, he escaped. Well, let's get a Maggie calling from Texas. Hi, Maggie. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, I have a couple of questions and a comment. About a year ago, I was at a convention, a rather small group, in which part of it was actually held in a common area in the Masons Club, or temple, whatever. And after we ate, the lodge master actually took some of us around for a tour, and I'm sure he didn't reveal any deep, dark secrets, but he did take us into at least two worship rooms, or whatever you would call them, ceremonial rooms, show us around and give us some history. My questions then are three and very quick. One, is this a common thing to do? And there were a lot of women among us. Secondly, how high a rank in degree would a person have to attain to be the lodge master? And three, do they actively recruit? He said that they do not. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Maggie. And okay, fine. Do they take people on tours of lodges?
Yes. You can. I'm told that you can go to the 33rd degree temple in Washington, D.C. I've had people take pictures and send them to me, so apparently that's available. But you can't just walk in. They take you through a tour, like this woman went through.
But they're not going to actually see the secret ceremony.
Oh, no. And then none of the books will be out. None of the hangings or trappings or symbols will be there. It's just a room with chairs and a floor. Maybe the floor might be marked with squares like a chessboard, black and white. But that's so what? That you could have that in your kitchen.
And of course, the second question would be, what rank do you have to be to become the worshipful master?
Well, I believe the worshipful master in a lodge is always a blue lodge. You can be a 32nd degree or a third degree. I met a Mason who was, and his family were having some real problems, and the pastor at the church that he was going to called me and asked me to sit down with the young man. Well, he wasn't a young man, but he was probably in his 40s or 50s. And he was a third-degree Mason, going to become the master, the worshipful master of his lodge here in Tucson. And he was the next in line. You get elected to that job. You work your way up from the bottom. You're elected at the bottom, and then you work your way up just through succession. And so we talked, and I showed him what the problems were. He went home, got his family together. All of his family members were in the Masons, in the women's group or children's group, and they all got out together, and I had a call from the pastor's wife 6 months later, and they they're seeing that masonry was the problem in their marriage. So that's the answer to your question. Apparently, you can be a third-degree Mason and be the master of your lodge, but the 33rd degree of masonry runs everything, in my opinion, worldwide.
Do they actively recruit?
No, yes.
They
are now recruiting
they
because
yeah.
they are really hurting for members.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine in California, that, by the way, knows Dr. Stan, he called a man in Southern California who was paid by the Masons, and they said they had 4.8 million members in 1984 or something like that, and now they're down to 3 million, and they're really hurting. And they're physically, for the first time, in violation of all the oaths that they take, actively recruiting. Someone sent me a copy of a billboard in Michigan where they're recruiting, you know, ask one to be one or something, and then I've seen bumper stickers that they put out now that say, ask one to be one. So they're recruiting because they're really hurting for members.
And
that's a very healthy sign.
And, of course, I think this is in part, directly referable to the work of Ralph Everson and a handful of other people who have been courageous enough to come out and tell the truth about this Luciferian organization where most Masons have no idea what it's really all about. And when you explain to them that there are two gods, there's the God that the Mason worships and there's the Christian God, and then they begin to read morals and dogma, they can understand it. Up to that point, you can't understand morals and dogma unless somebody points out what it's all about. Hey, thanks for calling, Maggie.
Oh, thank you very much.
God bless you. Please get all those people down there in Texas. What part of Texas are you in?
Central Texas.
All right, fine. Well, please get all those people in Central Texas, north, south as well. God bless. Bye-bye.
Yes,
get them
okay.
listening to us.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How you doing?
Hey, Dr. Stan. Very fine. Thank you. Wonderful guest. I think I heard him say on a previous episode that the Masonic initiates become married to Lucifer in some ceremony that symbolizes that. So I wanted to ask him, is there a special marriage ceremony ring that the initiate is given? I know that they have some special handshake.
Well, let's see what Ralph has to say about it. Have you ever heard anything about a marriage to Lucifer?
Yes, Dr. Stan, I found the evidence that there is indeed a marriage ceremony at the 14th degree. There's a company called McCoy, M-A-C-O-Y, that publishes a catalog with all of their material in it. And one day I was slipping through, and I saw I got one. Anyone can get one. I mean, I'm not a Mason, never been a Mason. But I got a free copy, and I'm flipping through it, and there's a picture of a bunch of rings. And one of them, the second one or third one in the top row, was called a 14th degree wedding ring. And it looks just like a wedding ring. So I then, subsequent to that, unknowingly, apparently I've had this article for some time, I found an article called the 14th degree wedding ring. And it's an article about the sanctity of the wedding ring, that the Mason is given this ring. So I don't think there's any question that apparently it's not something that you buy on your own or choose to buy. They give you one, and it looks just like a wedding ring with one exception. There's a triangle and the letter Yod in the Hebrew letter Yod for their God. So in that, since there's no woman allowed in the 14th degree ceremony, you've got to conclude, well, then who are you marrying? Because the article talks about the significance and importance of the marriage ceremony. So who are you marrying? Well, you're marrying the God. And the God is, as we've already said, it's already proven, the God is Lucifer. You've got to conclude that the 14th degree Mason, if he puts this ring on, is marrying their God, Lucifer, Satan, the devil.
But I don't think the average person by the 14th degree has any idea what it's all about. But it sure is fun because, of course, you're learning all these mysteries and all these secrets. And you're promised, you're going to have great power when you finally find the final secret.
Oh, but Dr. Stan, I got to ask one last thing.
Go ahead.
I heard someone say that they have a sort of a secret... expression that symbolizes Lucifer, and it was either Jabalah or Jubalah. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. Go ahead, Ralph. Explain
that. Yeah, there's
that.
Two words. There's one is Jabalon, and the other is Mahabon, and both of them are apparently secret names that they're revealing to you of their god, Lucifer, Satan, the devil.
Well, now, of course, I thought Jabalah was a combination of Jehovah, Baal, and...
But it's not the god, Dr. Stan, because they admit in their literature that there are two layers inside all of the worships of Job and Jabalon and, you know, etc. So that if On means Osiris and Baal means Baal and Jah means Yahweh, so there's a secret worship, and that's the key. I usually use the example of a circle inside of, a dot inside a circle. Everyone who believes in the god is inside the circle. If you don't believe in the god, you're outside the circle. And inside that circle, in the center, is a small dot of those who know that the god being worshipped, and let's just make it up, Osiris, the Egyptian sun god, in our little example. If you believe in Osiris, you're inside the circle. But inside that circle of people who believe in Osiris, is a small group called the adepts, the sages.
Hold it, Ralph. We're going to have to let Jack go. Thanks so much for calling, Jack. We're just about out of time here. Well, Ralph, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, let me just finish that last thought. That those people inside the dot believe or know that the god being worshipped is not Osiris or all over the world any god that you wish, but is in truth Lucifer, Satan, the devil, their god, the great architect of the universe. And that's the danger of this thing.
And of course it's Jabal, I think is the name, Yahweh or Jehovah, Baal, and Osiris.
That's right.
Combination. And of course, they cannot let people understand. I mean, certainly this is the secret that has been passed down through the ages. And of course, there is tremendous power. In fact, Manly P. Hall writes about when the mason on the block has learned the secret of his craft, he will have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. And this comes from a book called The Lost Keys of Freemasonry. When the mason on the block has determined the secret of his craft, has mastered the secret of his craft, he will have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. The average mason cannot even understand what this is about. But the thing is that, yes, if you give yourself to the prince of this earth, you will get tremendous advantage. You will have tremendous power and wealth, but at the cost of your eternal soul. You got about a minute and a half to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, you're very kind to allow me the chance. I would urge your listeners to get in touch with my material. Go to my website. Call me if you wish. If you wish to challenge what I've said, please call me as well. I'd be happy to discuss it with you. I know that I've been researching this since 1962. I believe I know from their own literature what the Masons are up to, and I write books about it. And I would urge your listeners to find out and find out, because we need to know what these Masons are doing to us and where they're taking us. America does have a secret destiny. It's on the back of your dollar bill.
And, of course, that, of course, epitomized by the pyramid. Capped by the all-seeing eye, which is hovering over the top of the pyramid, has not been allowed to descend.
But once
the New World Order is accomplished, then the capstone will fit into place.
That's right.
Of course, the age-old plan, the Novus Ordoris Seclorum, the New Order of the Ages, will be in place as well. Well, Ralph, I want to thank you so much for everything you do and for always being such a willing guest here on Radio Liberty. It's always a pleasure to have you, and we hope our listeners out there across the country and really throughout the world will benefit from your years and dedication to exposing this truly dark and sinister religion.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. It was my pleasure.
Good night. God bless.
God bless you.
All right. Well, that was Ralph Epperson, and Ralph has had a lonely battle for many years. But he's always been true to God. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and for those of you out there who have never heard things like we're talking about tonight, let me suggest that you certainly get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We apparently still have copies of Jim Shaw's book for sale, Deadly Deception. We carry books by William Sneblin entitled Masonry, Beyond the Light. We have, of course, the secret government special that has actually several DVDs by Bill Snevlin. And they, of course, take you into the secrets of the Illuminati. But Bill was actually involved, of course, in Masonry for many years and was in the levels of Masonry above the 33rd degree. That's the secret government special. You can simply get those DVDs on the secrets of the Illuminati. Now, I have a DVD on the secrets of the Illuminati, too, so don't get them confused. You'll want Bill Snevlin's material. And then, of course, we carry an excellent book by Dr. James Wardner, Unholy Alliance, going into the influence of Masonry on our courts, on our government, on every aspect of our lives. We have three pamphlets. They're called The Occult Hierarchy, and we hope many of you want to get them. They're simply compilations of my newsletters, which go into what's going on in much more detail. And, of course, we have a great DVD. It's titled The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. It was an award-winning documentary for last year on the New York Film Festival, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. And, of course, it takes you into the Rosicrucian movement in Elizabethan England and how it came to the United States in the 1600s and became a dominant force here in the United States and still is today. Of course, it's submerged now and works primarily within Masonry. But modern-day Masonry is the present-day manifestation of the ancient mystery religions that can be traced from ancient Babylon, through Egypt, through the Kabbalah, through the great philosophers of Greece, Pythagoras, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Alexander the Great, into the Magi who were there when Christ was born, into the Gnostics, into the Templars, into the Rosicrucians, into the Masons, into the Illuminati. And, of course, into the Council on Foreign Relations and the other secret societies. Of course, the Council on Foreign Relations says, we're not a secret society. Look, you can get our membership list. We publish it. And that's true. But no one will ever tell you that the Council on Foreign Relations came out of a secret society called the Round Table, which was the front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891, which came out of Masonry. Now, that's all covered in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written by one of the most preeminent historians of the 20th century, a man called Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor. And on page 952, you will find out that the Council on Foreign Relations was organized in 1921 as a front for the small American roundtable group. And, of course, elsewhere as you read, you find the round table is the front for Cecil Rhodes' secret society. All of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Quite frankly, we need your help to maintain the foundation we have. And, of course, to begin to increase our outreach across America. We have opportunities to do that, but we can't do it without your help. If you want people to understand, if you want people to be redirected, to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle today, and hopefully they'll come to know the Lord in that, with that knowledge, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, 4 hours a day on shortwave, 9 hours a day on Telstar 5 and Spontronics on your telephone anywhere in the world very soon. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.